Hello, everyone, and a very pleasant good afternoon to you, wherever you may be. This is Bruce Ash, along with special co-host, as advertised, Tom Danahy, welcoming you to this special Bernie Sanders and Michael Avenatti would-be President's Day weekend edition of Inside Track. Wow, what a week. Three Democrat socialist presidential candidates had a completely different sort of week. Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders had a very good week winning the New Hampshire primary. He leads the field in the upcoming Nevada contest, while would-be nominee Joe Biden, who placed fifth in last week's contest, limps into South Carolina, having zero chance to be the most likely candidate to beat President Trump this November, according to him. In other presidential news, would-be Democrat socialist presidential candidate, creepy porn lawyer Michael Avenatti's bid for a presidential nomination came to a crushing end when he was convicted by a Manhattan federal jury last week for his attempted shakedown of Nike, and he faces a possible 42-year jail term. He's also been indicted in California, where Avenatti is accused of defrauding other clients out of millions of dollars, tax crimes, and perjury. Just another week in the wacky 2020 Democrat socialist presidential nomination process. Our final courtroom news story this week concerns the New Jersey case of Octavio Cortez, who got 4 years, about the average amount of time, for his conviction of multiple sex crimes, while Roger Stone's federal prosecutor suggested a 7 to 9 year jail term in his political corruption case of allegedly lying to Congress, a crime frequently committed by elites such as former CIA chief, admitted communist John Brennan, who continues to lie about most everything as a CNN pundit every night. Tom, welcome.
What, I'm supposed to talk after that?
Why not? You're never at a loss for words.
First of all, you know, Lord knows I'm the last person that would ever want to judge somebody by their appearance. But didn't you, when you first saw Avenatti, didn't you just go, that guy's crooked as can be? I mean, he's shady, and I didn't know he was that shady. And then trying to shake down Nike, I guess he figured Nike would just like pay him $25 million out of the change they found in the sofa cushions or something, but that's crazy.
Yeah.
And he's going away for a long time.
Well, and he still faces problems in California as well.
And he can't get out on bond because he was moving around money and everything when he was on bond before. So, yeah, we haven't. Although, you know, is there anything that says that you can't run for president from prison?
I'll bet you, look, there's probably 1,000 people every year that actually fill out the forms to run for president in various parts of this country. Yeah. So anything's possible.
Now, again, and we've had this discussion. I don't want to beat it over, but it drives me nuts because I listened to Rush Limbaugh, and he's the one that started it, and now everybody else is picking up on it. My party, to which I have belonged since the 1970s, is not the Democrat Party. It's the Democratic Party. The official name is the Democratic Party. And if I wanted to be petty like some people that we won't mention, well, I'll mention names later.
Oh, come on, mention them now.
If Donald Trump was on the other side, he would call your party the Republic Party, and you'd be pissed, okay? And you say that's a petty little thing for an adult to do. And yet, adults all over America are calling the Democratic Party the Democrat Party because they think it's cute. It's not cute. It wasn't cute in the second grade.
Well, you notice I didn't call it the Democrat Party. I called it the Democratic Socialist Party.
Also,
because that's what a number of them.
Bernie Sanders
are
is
actually
a social Democrat, a socialist Democrat. I understand that.
Okay.
I do understand.
Now
that
we're splitting hairs pretty thinly.
One other thing, I wrote something. I don't know if you've ever heard about this story. Do you know that Upton Sinclair ran for governor of California in 1934?
Yes.
As a socialist.
Yes.
And he won the Democratic primary by a landslide. And their primary was like the last week of August. So it was like a 2-month sprint. And he was a 2-to-1 favorite. And then he kept opening his mouth. You know, and then But the movie studios came out against him because they started sending fake newsreels.
Uh-huh.
And
they had fake news in the 30s.
And the thing is, the people who did those campaigns against him, Earl Warren was the campaign manager for the guy named Merriam who would end up getting elected. But all these other guys came out and they said, we have to just flood the media with stuff. And those guys later on helped Richard Nixon win the 1950 Senate campaign against Helen Gahagan Douglas. And they helped Ronald Reagan get elected in the 60s. And it was basically the birth of media politics in a way. But
I can neither confirm or deny your charge that the same people who basically sandbagged the California guy in 34 was the same guy that helped Nixon. I'm going to take your word for it, but that might be an urban myth.
There's a really good book called Tricky Dick and the Pink Lady.
Oh, boy, I bet you that was a very down-the-middle book.
It's
no bias at all.
It actually was nominated for the Pulitzer Prize. It didn't win. But I don't think it was...
lots of books get nominated for the Pulitzer Prize.
I know. And I don't think it was... how could you not be slanted against Nixon in the first place? But that's a different story. But anyway, Upton Sinclair had a great line after the campaign was over. And he said, American people will take socialism, but they won't take the label. And it's true. You know, you yourself, you're old enough to get Social Security, aren't you?
I will start taking Social Security in April of this year on my 68th birthday.
That's socialism. It is. You know it is. Medicare socialism.
I paid into it. I deserve to get my money back.
I agree.
And I may not get all my money back.
You're an American. Taxes are the price we pay to live in a civilized society.
And you know, Tommy, you've heard me say it at least once or 100 times. The more taxes I pay, the more success I've had in that year, and I don't mind paying it.
You're rare.
No, I'm not. I don't think I'm rare at all. I think everybody who makes a good living, they should be compelled to pay whatever the legal tax rate is. I don't think a penny more, but it's a privilege to be able to pay those taxes. I made that money. And I think if you talk to 10 people, probably 8 of them on the street would give you the same answer. They don't want to pay one penny more.
Right.
But they don't want to pay one penny less.
Oh, okay. I'm one of those Democrats who's terrified that Bernie Sanders is going to get the nomination. I really am.
I'm actually thrilled about the possibility.
Well, I'm sure you are.
Because no. Seriously. Because I think that with everything that's been going on in this country now for the last several years, I think this country deserves to have a one-on-one election between free markets and socialism to stomp that idea out once and for all.
What, free markets? Yeah,
no.
Because it's not a free market.
It's freer than any other place in the world, Tom. Nothing's completely free and nothing's completely perfect.
Okay, well, we agree on that. Okay, I'm not going to argue that point. I'm still, what I don't understand is you're a smart guy and a nice guy and a family guy and everything else. I understand why many Republicans embrace Donald Trump. It's like, well, I'll overlook this stuff because he's putting money in my pocket. And he's keeping the brown horde on the other side of the wall. And he's, you know, whatever. But what bothers me is that people on your side don't understand why we despise him so much.
Why do you despise him so much, Tom? I think
he's
everybody wants to know.
He's a vulgar human being. He is somebody, we've been through this before. He says, well, that's locker room talk. He never would have been in one of my locker rooms. They'd have beaten his ass and thrown him out. I'm not kidding. And people say, oh, people talk about sex all the time in locker rooms. They don't talk about sexual assault in locker rooms.
Then you're
rooms.
Obviously for the status quo, which hasn't been working out too well for millions and tens or hundreds of millions of Americans for the last several decades.
We only have 300 million Americans.
Because all of these guys who've run for president and run for the Senate and run for the U.S. House, and frankly, most politicians, they promise lots of stuff knowing they're never going to deliver on them. This guy promised a bunch of stuff. He's been delivering on them, and that's the thing that drives most of the people on the left.
What has he delivered on?
Oh,
there are pieces of wall along the southern border.
Come on, Tom.
Seriously,
you,
what else?
You really don't want me to give you, after the break, you don't want me to go through that litany, okay? Because Nancy Pelosi had to sit through it during the State of the Union address, and she was one mighty, mighty uncomfortable dame. And you know that if you saw the State of the Union. She was squirming in her chair.
And okay, do we have to take a break now?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, we don't have to do it right now, but I would like to do a little commercial. I'd like everybody to support all of our Inside Track sponsors, Eb Wilkinson and Gary Imus at Imus Wilkinson Asset Management, Jamie and Gary Kipper at Tucson Iron and Metal Surplus, and the folks at Corazon Cabinets, Joy, Jennifer, and David. Each has been with Inside Track from the start. These are great companies you should do business with. I really do mean what I say, and I do business with each of them. Speaking of great local companies you should do business with, and Tom, if you need new cabinets, Corazon Cabinets is your locally owned wholesale one-stop source for high-quality kitchen, bath, and office cabinets, as well as designer services now. Do you have a home improvement project, Tom? Any home improvement projects?
Yeah, we actually do need cabinets.
No, this is a great place to go. If you do have a home improvement project, Corazon sells quality J&K, Yorktown, and Conestoga cabinets and offers a wealth of design resources for your home. Call Corazon Cabinets at 488-2266 and schedule a visit to the showroom. It's an easy number to remember, 488-2266. Tell Jennifer or Joy you heard this ad with Bruce on Inside Track and get an additional 5% discount on their already low wholesale prices. And Tom, I'll tell you what, if you call those ladies at Corazon Cabinets, I'll make sure you get another 10% on top of the 5% off.
I don't want them losing money on me.
On you, you know, we talk about socialism all the time. This is Bruce's socialism, okay? Why not cut a deal for my buddy? We have a great show for you today. Tom and I will exchange barbs for the first almost 45 minutes of the show. And then starting about 12:45 until the top of the hour.
1:45.
I'm sorry. I keep saying that. Until 1:45. Yeah. Anyway, Attorney James Harrison will join us to talk about the aftermath of the recent failed congressional coup attempt. And perhaps we can convince him to talk about Roger Stone and the James McCade cases. And special listener alert, next Saturday's Inside Track show will feature special guest author, activist, and pundit David Horowitz, another guy I'm sure you hate his guts, whose David Horowitz Freedom Center has threatened to file a lawsuit against Pomona and Pitzer colleges over their support of anti-Semitism online. So, you know, this is a good guest next week.
I don't hate anybody.
Oh, God, you dislike him intensely.
David Horowitz? I like smart people that say smart things, even if I disagree with them. I've always liked George Will,
yeah.
Even though I don't like the bow tie, and he likes baseball. But other than that, I've always liked George
Will. What's wrong with baseball?
It's
pitchers
boring
and
game.
Catchers, man. They're back.
It's a game. You know what? Baseball was something that you do between the end of basketball season and the start of football practice when you're a kid. And then, I don't know, it's just so. And I played baseball. I played baseball in Mexico. They gave me money.
I know you did.
But it's just. It's baseball, dude. It's like, ugh.
All right, John, hey, let's take our first break, and when we come back, Tom and I will go at it. We've got loads to talk about. You're listening to Inside Track. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Inside Track. It's Bruce Ash here with my special guest host and great friend, Tom Danahy. Tom, at the risk of setting you off on a rant, in your most recent Tucson Weekly column, you wrote, "Now that he's been acquitted, Trump can get back to his ever-growing enemies list, and the now totally unrestrained Donald Trump must first lay waste to America and democracy and Mitt Romney. But when he runs out of rivers to pollute, syntax to butcher, and brown-skinned families to destroy, he'll come for you." So besides your communist-crazed readers who, you know, who else do you think is going to believe what you said there?
Anybody who's been in America the last 4 years?
Oh, come on. Really? He's going to come after you, Tom? He's going to come
after... Well, he's not coming after me because I'll fight back.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm smarter than he is. Well, I mean, everybody's smarter than he is.
Really? I love it. I love it that guys don't give him the credit that he's due.
What credit does he do? He can molest women and get away with it. Mm-hmm. He can go through multiple bankruptcies and come out smelling like a rose. Mm-hmm. He can get $400 million from his dad and claim he's a billionaire, that he's a self-made billionaire. That's nonsense, okay? And the thing is, what I don't understand, Bruce, you lived, obviously, I don't know where you grew up. You grew up in Tucson.
I did.
And I thought about you the other day. I watched the Linda Ronstadt documentary. Have you seen that?
I live two blocks away from where Linda Ronstadt grew up.
I highly recommend it. I mean, she's just an amazing person. I know her politics are crazy.
Yeah, no, but she's still a great artist. Yeah. I wish she'd keep her mouth shut, but,
shut up and sing.
It's America. She can do that.
That's the name of the, that's the name of the documentary about the Dixie Chicks. It's called, it's Shut Up and Sing.
Oh, well.
Yeah, that was pretty good. Anyway, but I don't understand it. You were a swimmer. You were an athlete.
Mm-hmm. Yep, all that.
And you were you a smart guy too? And were you in like AP classes or whatever, or the equivalent thereof?
I don't know probably, but they really didn't have AP at that time.
Yeah, I know that I didn't have them, but we had classes for,
Never in math and science would I have ever been in a smart guy classification.
Okay. And but the thing is, I just don't understand it, how people can say, oh, he's just a normal guy. He's not. And the thing is, I was born, I don't know if you know, I was born in 1952. And so I was born in November. So it was after the election. So Truman was still the president in his lame duck period. Mm-hmm. But I was basically
born.
Were
you aware of that when you were a baby?
No. Okay. But maybe. I don't know.
Digress, yeah.
Yeah. But, Eisenhower was just a nice guy, and he was a war hero. And then, obviously, I despised Nixon because he lied and was crooked. And Gerald Ford was just there. I didn't like Ronald Reagan. Personally, I met him a couple times. He was a nice guy. I didn't agree with his politics. The Bushes, they were Republicans. I could disagree with them. There has never been a political figure in my life that I have despised like this person. And it doesn't consume me because I believe America is stronger than he is. But let me ask you this. Okay. If somebody had said that a president of the United States would have said, oh, I have the perfect right to do whatever I want, would that have bothered you if anybody else other than Donald Trump had said it?
Well, you can take that out of context however you like. Let me quote your words. You wrote that President Trump wants to destroy brown families, but isn't it brown families and a lot of black families who are working more, earning more, have greater opportunities for a good education, have more liberty today than they have in recent decades, and a chance for a great future? I mean, that would be pretty hard to deny, wouldn't it? This is destroying brown families and black skin families?
I didn't say anything about black skin families.
No, you did. No, you said in your, I'm quoting, and to butcher,
syntax,
excuse me, and brown skin families to destroy.
Right.
To destroy. Richard, we have you on hold here on Inside Track. Greetings. What's on your mind?
Hey, Bruce and Thomas. This is like an old-timey show today. I really enjoy it.
We're slapping each other around here.
Yeah, it's good. You got Danahay on there. It's great. Let me ask you this, guys. The big concern that I see, after Trump killed General Soleimani, if you start looking for justification for the killing, you realize that the president really doesn't need justification anymore. After 9/11, we passed the Bush doctrine of intervention and preventative war, coupled with the USA Patriot Act, putting us under mass surveillance. And George W. Bush set a lot of precedents that Donald Trump can use, and there's nothing anybody can do about it. We've given the president the power to attack people and to possibly attack nations. We've given away that Congress has ceded all this power, plus with all the executive orders that Bush, Obama, and Trump have now used over and over. Basically, we've created a Frankenstein here. We've given the presidency dictatorial powers, and now we have a man who will abuse that power.
Tom?
I agree wholeheartedly. I wouldn't have voted for the Patriot Act. I wouldn't have. It was an overreaction. And obviously 3,000 Americans dead when those buildings fell down was a horrible thing. But somebody's got to be an adult and take a deep breath and hold back. They shouldn't have gone into Iraq, shouldn't have gone into Afghanistan. I would, you know what though? Osama bin Laden. And I, this again, I go back to my youth when I was, you know, a punk on the streets. If Osama bin Laden, if I'd been president when Osama bin Laden did that in 2001, I would have spared no expense. I would have leveled the hills between the mountains between Afghanistan and Pakistan looking for him until I got him. But it's like Bruce slapped me, so I'm going to go fight with Richard. That doesn't make sense. Why would he go to Iraq?
You've been saying that for years.
Well, why did he? Isn't that what we did?
You've been saying that for years, and you've tried to show this in way, way too simplistic of a manner. Okay, because it wasn't just about slapping Richard around when you were going after the other guy. Okay, you did have to slap the other guy around because it was all combined. These were breeding grounds for terrorism. All of these areas were harboring terrorists that had been going on for decades. Clinton administration had passed the buck. The first Bush administration had tried to do something with Saddam Hussein, stopped short of correcting that problem. And look, I don't think any of us agree with what happened from the time effectively we defeated Saddam and he left the presidency in Iraq. But to do what we had to do there, it was part of the global war on terror. Richard, are you still on? Nope. Okay.
All right. I have a question.
All right.
I thought you would get on me about the other part. How many times do you think Donald Trump in his life has used anti-Semitic slurs? How many times? How many times?
Tom.
Once.
Tom.
A million.
You are committing really a grievous act of discrimination.
I've never used that term ever. Not once.
You are absolutely, absolutely wrong about Donald Trump and on anti-Semitism. Wrong. You couldn't be wronger than anything. You're totally wrong. I mean, the policies of this president, I mean, arguably, you know, Bill Clinton always says that he was the first black president, okay? People joke about that. Arguably, Donald Trump is the first Jewish president. The things that he has done for the Jewish people are enormous.
For Jewish people, and that's it's a good idea for him for the West Bank to be taken over by Israel, even though they gave it away already, and now they want to take it back. Is that simplistic? Go ahead, say it's simplistic.
It is a little simplistic.
Okay. Didn't they give it away? Didn't they promise you can live there and we'll live over here and live in peace?
There have been lots of promises broken in the Middle East by lots of people over the years. The Palestinians, Tom, have never figured out a way to overthrow their dictators and actually have leaders that care about them. They're going to reject this peace deal like they have all the other
I would.
Deals. Really?
Yeah. Okay. I have this land right here that you gave me, although I lived here before you got here. My grandparents came here before your grandparents did. Is that true?
I don't know. When did your grandparents get here?
Well, my grandparents, they lived in Europe. I'm talking about, I'm a Palestinian, and my people have been here for generations. The Jewish people have been here since 1948. Jewish country has been here since 1948.
The Jewish country has been there.
Yes.
Jews have been.
Oh, of course, Jews have been there since Jesus. I understand that.
Since way before Jesus.
Yes.
For crying out loud.
I understand that.
For Christ's sakes.
He made an evil sign that you can't see on the radio. I'm just kidding. He didn't. But I don't. Why can't they live in peace? Why can't they? I know it's going to be hard. You know, somebody's got to be an adult.
Until the Palestinians and the Iranians and all the other people who want to wipe the Jews off the face of the earth decide that they're not willing to die one more son or daughter to kill somebody else. There's going to continue to be war there.
That's sad. I agree. And unfortunately, I agree that that's the case. But Israel's not making things better. They're not. And Trump isn't making things better. You might say, oh, this is great. He's going to allow us to have a land grab. And I've told you, I've been a fan of Israel since I was a high school kid watching the daily reports on the Six-Day War. I was thinking, these are the baddest dudes of all time.
Let's go back to the presidential campaign. Are you a Mayor Pete fan?
He's okay.
Mayor Pete apparently has been a fan of socialism for quite some time.
So have I.
Did you know that in 2000, as a high school student, young Peter Buttigieg submitted an entry and won the JFK Library contest for the top award for these words? I quote, "Bernie Sanders' courage is evident in the first word he uses to describe himself, socialist. In a country where communism is still the dirtiest of ideological dirty words, in a climate where even liberalism is considered radical, and socialism is immediately and perhaps willfully confused with communism, a politician dares to call himself a socialist. He does indeed. Here is somebody who has looked into his own soul and expressed an ideology, the endorsement of which in today's political atmosphere is analogous to a self-inflicted gunshot wound. Even though he has lived through a time in which an admitted socialist could not act in a film, let alone hold a congressional seat, Sanders is not afraid to be candid about his political persuasion." Now, JFK was a cold warrior. You know, he was a cold warrior. Could you imagine a future presidential candidate like Mayor Pete or the likes of Senator Sanders ever becoming a serious presidential candidate running on a socialist plank? I mean, what would JFK say today if he was still alive?
You know, first of all, I got to say, if he actually wrote that in high school, pretty well written.
Yeah, well, he says a lot of words, okay? He was a socialist then, he's a socialist today. He's like the rest of them in the Democratic Socialist Party who have raised their hand for every crazy deal that's out there.
Okay, I've said this a million times too, and you can rub it in. I always thought that during the New Deal, they should have instituted socialized medicine, and it would have been fixed by now, and it would have been great.
Yeah, just like in the UK.
I think we're the greatest country in the history of the world, and we can't take care of our own people. Or we won't take care of our own people.
All right. We got to take a break. We're going to take our late bottom of the hour break. When we come back, we'll continue bashing each other's brains in, and hopefully we'll get to talk to James Hearson. You're listening to Inside Track. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Inside Track. Bruce Ash here with Tom Danahy. We're just talking about JFK, the Cold Warrior. Could he imagine, Tom, I mean, seriously, could he imagine a future presidential candidate like Mayor Pete or Bernie Sanders who really are running as socialists?
I don't know. Could he imagine that his running mate would turn out to be probably the most liberal agenda in the history of America?
Past the Kennedy agenda.
So the Kennedy agenda was civil rights? Not so much. I mean, Bobby Kennedy maybe, but not John Kennedy. John Kennedy wanted to stay away from that thing like it was a stinking pile of trash. He did not want to get into that fight. He might have done it in his second term, but he didn't want to do it in his first term. And then Lyndon Johnson, you know, who had probably used the N-word a few times in his life.
I'm sure he did. There certainly are reports of that.
And I don't, you know what? I honestly think that maybe this is simplistic.
I think
he was
on tape actually using those words.
Yeah. But I think Lyndon Johnson got that stuff passed not because people felt sorry for Kennedy being killed, but Lyndon Johnson, have you ever seen that picture of the Johnson treatment?
Yeah.
That's the greatest picture ever because he was a big man and he leaned over people and it was just like terrifying. And Johnson knew where all the bodies were buried. I mean, he had buried a bunch of them himself and he got that thing passed. I mean, the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act, Civil Rights Bill and the Voting Rights Act. And then obviously the war on poverty, which was probably a big mistake. I will agree on that. But
how do you think JFK would react to the concepts embraced by the better part of the Democratic Party today? No borders, no ICE, pay off college debt, supporting infanticide.
Who supports that?
Tom, are you either BSing me or are you just...
I don't support infanticide. I don't support open borders.
In Virginia, they've passed that. In Illinois, they've passed
that. That's a dumbass thing that they did, too.
In California, they've passed that. It's on the agenda in a bunch more states right now. There's a significant block of Democrats. And by the way, the State of the Union, did you watch it on
yes.
TV? Okay. So what part of... blacks working at higher numbers than they've ever worked before. What part about a young poor black girl who got a opportunity scholarship to attend a charter school. Are those bad things or are they good things? Well, and, if they are good things, why the hell did all of those people sit on their can? And they literally were taking directions from the speaker to get up, get down, you know, get up, stand down.
Well, that's not the first time this ever happened. But first of all, the opportunity grant is to a private school. A charter school is free for anybody anyway, right? Charter schools are free. And an opportunity grant, the thing is, I you know that I'm completely against vouchers. I mean, 100%.
I know you are. And but when you're, but if your kid was locked in a government school,
here we go. Government school.
You know what? Even the Democrats call them call them government schools.
I don't.
Today.
I'm a
Democrat.
Well,
there are plenty of Democrats that are running for the presidency who call them government schools. Mayor Pete calls them government schools. Bernie Sanders calls them government schools. Amy Klobuchar calls them government schools. Joe Biden calls
I've never heard any of them say that, but I believe you. Anyway, the thing is, public schools, I honestly believe public schools are why America is where it got in the 20th century. If there hadn't been open enrollment for anybody who wanted to get an education, then America would not be what it is today. Mm-hmm. You went to public school, I went to public school. Am I damaged for life? No. And I went to public school in the ghetto. And you know what? It didn't matter that it was in the ghetto because my parents wanted me to get an education. They wanted me to study. They wanted me to read. They wanted me to be smart. I think that parental involvement is way more important than whatever school you send a kid to. I think it's infinitely more important than whatever school. I could send my kids, and obviously they're both grown and they're both Ivy League graduates and everything else, right? I could send them to any school here in Tucson and they would get an education because I would see to it that they got an education because it's my responsibility to see to it that they get an education. I hate this stuff about, oh, the schools are failing us. No, you're failing your own kids. I saw Chris Rock the other night. You know Chris Rock?
I do.
He went on a rampage about parents not taking care of their kids. He goes, if a kid calls his grandma mama and calls his mom Pam, that kid's going to go to jail someday. And I agree wholeheartedly. Anyway, I have one question before the next guest comes on. I have to ask you this. Every day, Donald Trump says this, you know, I can get away with this. And he just says it out in the open, and we become inured to it, and it's like, okay, he's crazy. Let me ask you this question. He gets reelected because the stupid Electoral College does what it does again. Mm-hmm. And I know that's the way the law is written and everything. I hate the fact that the United States does not have majority rules. Whoever wins the most votes wins. I just can't stand it. And if your party had two of the last five elections.
Hang on, Mark.
If your two of the last five elections had been decided by the Electoral College and not the popular vote, you'd probably be a little bit upset about that too. But what happens if Donald Trump gets reelected and at the end of his next term, he says, you know what? I want to run again.
Oh, please.
Wait, I'm asking. What you would just, you do? Would that be the thing that straw that broke the camel's back?
You really have gone deranged on Trump. For a brilliant guy, you've become a deranged.
He does not want to be president. He wants to be king.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I heard the same thing during the
Nixon.
What
would happen? Would that do something? Nixon didn't want to run again.
Come on.
Ronald Reagan didn't want to run again.
You're just projecting an absolutely asinine thought. All right. We got Mark on the line, and I think Mr. Herson might be also standing by. So let's take Mark for a quick comment, and then we're going to take James Herson till the top of the hour. Mark, go ahead.
Ooh. Okay. Anyway, I got a question about changing my party affiliation to the Democrat Party. I don't say Democratic or Democrat, it's Democrat Party. So I can vote for Comrade Bernadoff Sandersky and maybe cause, hopefully, if we all did that, then maybe cause some problems with the Democrat Party.
Mark, do you understand that there's a difference between socialism and communism? Like a big difference?
Not much.
Not much.
Really?
Yeah, so it doesn't matter. The Democrats support the leftist National Socialist American Workers Party, the Marxist, Angelist, Leninist, Stalinist, Maoist, Castroist, Pol Potist, Chavezist, Maduroist.
You're going to bite your tongue, you saying ist all the time, all right? Get to the end.
Anyway, so what about doing that, pulling some kind of a new Operation Chaos in the next couple of days? Because the time is up on the 18th.
Quick answer, Tom, then we got to get to James Harrison.
Yeah, I don't think people should be able to. Well, if you change party affiliation, then that's perfectly legal. That's fine. I know that it goes back to Donald Segretti and Rat, whatever it is, Ng, and in Watergate, and obviously Rush Limbaugh has recommended, what did he call it, Operation Chaos or something?
That's what he called it.
Yeah. So that's politics. That wouldn't bother me. But I still drives me crazy that intelligent Americans conflate socialism and communism. We have lots and lots of socialism already here in the United States, and nobody complains about it.
All right. Our next guest is James Harrison. He's a lawyer and media psychology expert. He's a New York Times bestselling author, attorney, news analyst, cultural commentator, and social media scholar. In his weekly column for Newsmax.com, The Left Coast Report, James features his insight and commentary on the confluence of the entertainment, political, cultural, ideological, and social media world. James, my lefty special co-host, Tom Danahy, may not agree with you on many of your political views, but, and I'm not sure Tom knows this, I think he will appreciate knowing more that you were once a keyboardist for the legendary group, one of the most of all time legendary, The Temptations. James Harrison.
Temptations were like my Beatles. You know, I love The Temptations.
What do you think about that, sir?
No, I mean, that was at a time when there was no affirmative action in music.
Were you one of the Funk Brothers?
I had to be funky. I had to actually. I wasn't one of the Funk Brothers, but I knew particularly one of the Funk Brothers because his son played on the road with me. His name was James Jamerson.
Oh, my goodness. He's a legend. I'm not kidding. I'm getting goosebumps.
I know you are.
Well, I was just listening to him play on a track this morning. I just can't believe they almost didn't need a drummer when James was there. But his son was a good friend and toured at the time I did. His name was James Jamerson Jr., which makes sense.
Right.
But unfortunately, both are playing in the Heavenly Band now.
Jamerson, Bruce, I don't know if you know Jamerson. His bass line was so fat. I mean, it was at the beginning of My Girl. Doom, 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 doom.
Yep.
Oh my God!
All right, we're here to talk about politics a little. James, you wrote an article: How Trump's Impeachment Record Can Be Wiped Clean. Now, Tom is in cardiac arrest about this, but tell us why the record should be cleared. You wrote, and this is a recent piece you just did, expungement is a necessary one because the fatally flawed process of the House of Representatives used to pursue the impeachment of the president in the first place. And then you quote Kevin McCarthy, who also wrote, this is the fastest, weakest, and most political impeachment in history. I don't think it should stay on the books. Why should the record be expunged?
Well, the word flawed is a kind word for this impeachment process. It started, first we had the impeachment inquiry, which requires a vote. There was no vote. Then we had the secret depositions that took place in the basement, in the highly secured room. I called them
cone of silence.
Witness auditions. There were selective leaks, and one of the transcripts from both the auditions and testimony is missing. The evidence that was produced was mostly hearsay and opinion that would be inadmissible in court. And the rules process that was imposed by Adam Schiff and then Jerry Nadler prohibited the president from his constitutional rights to confront witnesses, to bring his own witnesses to mount a defense. And then after saying, the speaker said, we believe, which I agreed with her at the time, is impeachment is very, should be compelling, and it's potentially divisive for the country, and it should always be bipartisan. And of course, then we had a vote on very weak articles of impeachment without a single person from the Republican Party voting on it. So it was not bipartisan. And then after saying that it was urgent and that the president was a clear and present danger, we've got to move fast, arbitrarily, Nancy Pelosi breached her constitutional duty and withheld the articles illegally and did so imposing conditions on the Senate actually giving a casebook example of obstruction of Congress, one of the article's points. So to me, that's just sort of the tip of the spear why it's flawed. But there's been a lot of debate as to whether, and the word that's used for this is borrowed from criminal law, it's expungement, and whether expungement can be accomplished by the House under a Speaker McCarthy. Sorry to say that. I might send some chills up the spine. But
Tom's getting nervous.
Yeah, but the fact is, even some of my friends who are legal analysts got caught on their heels. One of them, who's a friend of mine, said on television, well, if expungement was possible, the Democrats would have done it for Clinton. And he didn't realize that the Democrats actually did try to expunge Bill Clinton's impeachment.
I'd forgotten that also.
Yeah, Congressman Chaka Fata from Pennsylvania.
Watch your language.
Yeah. He, by the way, he's someone who's kind of not talked about today because he's in prison.
Yeah, I was just going to say, he went to jail.
he's not even from Chicago.
That's yeah, weird. He was bribery, money laundering, and all this. But in any case, the only reason it didn't go through is because it didn't pass the House. Also, there's historical precedent.
Yeah, talk about this. The 19th century censure of Andrew Jackson, because it's an important parallel, I think.
Well, that's the thing. So Jackson, who's often compared with President Trump, by the way, because he was also, let's say, outspoken and had an unusual style. He was running. By the way, Jackson was a Democrat.
Yep.
And Jackson was running against a Republican. They had a different name at that time, but it was Henry Clay for Jackson's reelection. So Andrew Jackson wins the election, but Henry Clay's Republican Party takes over the Senate. And there was a big dispute going on, a lot of political divisiveness, like today, very polarized. And Clay would have loved to impeach Andrew Jackson, but you can't do that because he only controlled the Senate. So the Senate passed a censure of President Jackson. But then a couple of years later, when the Democrats got the majority in the Senate, they passed an expungement resolution erasing the censure. So my argument would be, and it's pretty, is that if a legislative body has the power to expunge a censure that which is passed by resolution, then a subsequent House has the power to expunge an impeachment that's passed by resolution. So, and since Kevin McCarthy floated it, President Trump, of course, agrees it's a great idea. I think it's coming. I think it's going to happen because I think the winds are blowing the way politically for a Speaker, Kevin McCarthy. I think it's going to happen.
You know, up until the impeachment case and then the eventual trial in the Senate, I had told my colleagues at the RNC that I didn't think, I figured we would hold or maybe do a little better in the U.S. Senate if the president won re-election. I wasn't sure if we could take back the House. I think, though, that although that's certainly not a lock at all, James, it is more of a possibility today than what it was prior to mid-December, don't you think?
Oh, I think it's much more of a possibility simply because the issues that have been talked about at the Democrat debates, not all of them, but generally most of them, are issues that are not of concern to the rank and file voter in most states. Now, in my state, I live in California, and California has like 8 to 10 seats that were taken in the wave of 2018.
Right.
The local party is a very weak Republican Party is weak statewide, but they were completely shell-shocked and were by the funding, which, by the way, in part reportedly was Mike Bloomberg funding some of these local races. But what's happened since is that the Republicans have gotten more organized. They've got some very winsome candidates. They have a real healthy primary going. And I think they're going to, it's just, I'm judging anecdotally by my area. There's a lot of energy to take back some of these seats, which were razor thin margins, some of which in areas that trend slightly Republican, you know, they'd be purple areas. So I think there are districts all over the country like that. And I do think, you know, it obviously is going to depend on what happens in the battle in the Democrat Party, whether Bernie Sanders is able to hold the front runner's status and get the nomination. Even Democrats that I know are very worried about Bernie Sanders' effect on the down vote.
I certainly am. Well, I have a question. You were talking about the expungement thing. Bruce and I don't know how old you are, but Bruce and I are of an age that we remember Watergate. And whenever thing is brought up on whatever station, Fox or MSNBC or whatever, when they're talking about impeachment, they'd always talk about Andrew Johnson, Bill Clinton, and now Donald Trump. And then they'd mention Nixon. Now, Nixon did not get impeached, and yet it's 45 years later, and people still talk about Nixon as though he got impeached. Even if they expunged Donald Trump's impeachment, it would not go away in the public consciousness. Even 50 years from now, people would still say he was impeached, and then some of his Republican buddies wiped it off the books.
Well, yeah. No, I mean, you can't stop people from bringing up the impeachment, but if there's an expungement, just like with Andrew Jackson, they'd also have to bring up the expungement. But in addition, Kevin McCarthy and the Republican leadership, they want to investigate the origin of the impeachment. They want to take a look at the face of the impeachment, a congressman from my state, Adam Schiff, who I believe that was a terrible decision by Nancy Pelosi to put him in charge. After 3 years of representations that he had evidence in his possession.
He's like Joe McCarthy back in the 50s, you know, lots of charges and no evidence.
Yeah, I mean, so his credibility was so low. You don't pick a person with that kind of credibility. But in any case, there is this issue of whether Adam Schiff or his staff or both had contact with the so-called whistleblower. And it reminds me of the origin story that we're now hearing about the FISA abuse and about Crossfire Hurricane and Peter Strzok and Lisa Page. But I think there's a lot to be told because Adam Schiff had on his staff a colleague of the person that has been reported to be the whistleblower.
Right.
And his report that was written, which was put together by a Democratic, well-known Democrat lawyer, reads more like Adam Schiff's fictional telephone conversation than it does like the actual transcript, which could be an inference of coordination. And if there is that coordination, that's going to be a bigger asterisk to the whole impeachment process, even than the expungement itself, but it will justify an expungement, but it'll be part of history.
James, we're gonna have to end it there. Our time is up, and thanks for joining us today. Great stuff. You've written some other great pieces. I want to have you back on the show soon. And hey, everybody, until next week when Eb returns for Inside Track, this is Bruce Ash and
Tom Danahy.
Tom Danahy, wishing you a very pleasant good afternoon. And thank you all for joining us today. It's been a great show. And Tom, I always enjoy having you here on the show.
I always look forward to coming.
Sometimes.
I do. I love it here.
All right. Well, friends, thanks very much. And look forward to seeing you again next week when we have David Horowitz on the show. And we'll have a good time then.